Ooh, I'm having a fucking heat stroke up here.
Welcome to the Pre-Dead Boys. It is the award-winning podcast about the history and culture of death and decomposition. My name is Dorian. With me on the internet right now is Max. Max, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
That's great. We're just refreshed, just sat back talking about our favorite memes, and now we're ready to get serious.
We started by talking about our favorite donuts, which is arguably a better conversation, but it wasn't recorded. So
it was a lot more enjoyable than like trying to explain memes that are funny when you see them.
Yeah.
But when you explain them out loud, they just sound very stupid.
You guys know Dorian doesn't like cake donuts.
Cake donuts are a crime against the rest of donuts. Glazed or die.
Wait, hold on. Hold on. So you like a glazed donut?
Yeah.
But you also like filled donuts?
Sometimes. Depends on the filling. I don't fuck with custard, but a good cream-filled donut. Dude, I know some custard-loving perverts. They shall remain nameless. Don't worry, your filthy secret is safe with me, you bastards. Anyway, yeah, I love glazed donuts. Those are usually my preference. I love a good apple fritter.
Mm. Yeah.
Anyway, welcome to our Food Part 2 episode. No, just kidding. We're done talking about food. That was last week's episode. This time, though, Max has prepared some death-related topic for us to discuss. Max, what do you have for us?
I have. So things are kind of starting to, like, cool down quarantine-wise here in Ohio. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe we're getting close to the end of having to record remotely, which I would love. Like, maybe we knock out a few more episodes like this. Then we can get together in person again.
Yep.
I don't know what that's going to be like. But I am grateful that we can continue to do this over the internet, like, fairly easily. And I know we've had our fair share of hiccups and all that, and you have to do all the audio editing, which means your job is significantly harder than mine is right now. Because, like, I could theoretically just go to the library and do all this research. I can't go inside a library right now.
I was going to say, they're all closed. Do not go inside of a library until they're allowed, until they open back up legally. Unless you're just breaking into libraries, which is kind of the most hilarious crime I could possibly think of.
Stealing knowledge. But like, so I could do all this research without the internet, but like with quarantine the way it is right now, we couldn't record the podcast without the internet.
Right.
So just like how I've been cooking a lot more, so we did a whole episode about food. I feel like my whole existence has been on the internet lately. Like, I've been working remotely and doing this podcast remotely and like hanging out with my friends remotely. Like,
you've been extremely online.
Yeah, I have been. I think everyone has been extremely online lately.
Yep.
So the internet's been on my brain. So what I want to talk about today is death and the internet.
Hmm.
It's kind of fun. I'm very excited for it because I think it kind of qualifies as like Brave New World territory, where we're kind of on the edge of what people know and can experience right now. And every day we're pushing deeper and deeper into like, our brains have to adapt to a lot of things very quickly, and it's weird. And I think it has some really interesting implications for how we deal with death. So I don't know. I'm excited to dig into this with you.
Yeah, this sounds interesting.
Yeah. So, without further ado, as always, let's crack into the topic with the official Pre-Dead Boys Crack Into the Topic moment, brought to you on your end by...
I have Aha Citrus and Green Tea flavor.
Oh.
Haven't had it yet. We'll see how it goes. What about you?
I'm working with La Kroger Orange, Mandarin Orange.
It's a classic.
Perfectly synced. Incredible.
Oh, this is good.
Is it?
Yeah.
Where'd you get it from?
Grocery store.
Nice.
This has electrolytes and is caffeinated because it's made with real tea.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. They have another one, another flavor, black cherry and coffee seltzer water.
That's what you had in the food episode.
Yes. It's very good. I love it so much.
Which is actual coffee, right? Like it's actually caffeinated too?
Nice. Yeah. I was buzzing.
Have you been to Weiland's lately?
No, not recently.
Best liquor store in the city. Also best seltzer selection in the city. Like insane. Bonkers. Out of this world.
Huh. Haven't seen their seltzer section.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do recommend. 10 out of 10. We made pizza for dinner last night, and so there was some hints of the chicken and provolone pizza that I made.
Disgusting.
Terrible. Gotta move this to the floor. Cool. So, are you fucking done?
Am I done? With what?
Moving your face away from burping or whatever you were just doing?
Yeah, I'm burping. And I'm moving away from the fucking microphone so you don't have to hear it. I'm showing you some kindness and courtesy that you are not showing me, Max. You're just like leaning up against the microphone like...
like how Godzilla burps.
Yeah, so if you see me on the camera lean away from the microphone, it's because I'm burping and I'm trying to be courteous. You butthole.
There we go. Oh, boy.
So the internet.
The internet. I feel like over the past few months, since I have been doing a lot of, you know, working from home and all that stuff, I've been thinking about the internet a lot. And a lot of that has been dealing with like, or a lot of that has looked like, you know, I've consciously tried to step back on my social media use. And that started in like February or March. I recently made Katrina change my Facebook password to just like something. But that way, if I want to log into Facebook again, I have to like reset my password, which Facebook does not make easy.
Mm-hmm.
I have to do like a lot of work.
So it's a deterrent.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm just like fucking around on social media. I haven't really been on Twitter or Instagram in a while, aside from like looking at posts. I've got a book at the library that's on reserve titled 10 Arguments for Deleting Your Social Media Accounts Right Now, which is maybe the worst title for a book that I've ever heard.
It's a little wordy.
Yeah. But I'm excited to read it. I don't know. It's causing like some weird feelings of guilt about not being able to like do posts about recent political stuff and the murders of people by police and people in power here, white people.
It's the trade-off. Like, for better and for worse, social media engages you with the world. And, you know, sometimes you're just kind of trapped engaging with whatever is most popular or coming up on your feed. And that's not necessarily like the best or most accurate thing. But, you know, the flip side is like there are cool moments. I know that participating in some of the, I don't know, just some of the protests and like going online and seeing people also support the Black Lives Movement is like, I don't know. It's cool. Like, the internet can be a tool for a lot of jackassery, but it can also be a tool of solidarity and unity with people over a good cause. It's a big old mixed bag of all kinds of things, the internet.
It's, I mean, it really is. And, you know, like, as much as I am trying to dial stuff back, I am really interested by the internet, just like what it means for how we, like, operate as people and what it means for our brains and how we have relationships and things like that. Like, what do you think is most culturally interesting about the internet? You mentioned kind of bringing people together in solidarity over causes and stuff, but like, as an artist who kind of has to use it for promotion, what do internet issues mean for you?
Max, that's a real big question. I don't know exactly where I want to go with that. I don't know. Like, as an artist, one thought that I've had a lot frequently lately is, you know, if I'm promoting my visual artwork and illustrations and stuff, it's got to be through Instagram. That's just, like, the most conducive to, like, actually being successful as an artist and getting eyes on your work. But at the same time, Instagram is primarily... people who are there to kind of promote their visual stuff. You know what I mean? It's like, whether it's like media influencers working with brands, or it's tattoo artists or filmmakers or whatever, everybody on Instagram for the most part is trying to show something and get something out there. And there's not a whole lot of people there to like just be part of the conversation and interact. And that's one thing I like about Twitter is like, It is a social network in the sense that it's about socializing and talking with people. There, you know, like promoted stuff doesn't do quite as well on that platform unless people are actually talking about it and engaging with it. So I don't know. It's kind of a hassle to like navigate social media when it comes to promoting something that you're doing, because you do have to be sensitive to like the platform that you're on and what works and what doesn't. I don't know. It's a whole big bag of stuff. It's definitely just something that's like, it's part of normal life now. You can't ignore it. If you do any kind of business, you have to involve social media somehow.
Yeah, no, I think that's excellent. And I think that like some of those things that you're talking about, like kind of that performative mindset and the idea of like consumption versus engagement, digital ownership, things like that, like what companies own when you post things on Instagram. Like I think Instagram and Facebook both own what you post on them, I believe. It might just be Facebook.
It's they have the rights to use some of your stuff, but they don't completely own it. It's a whole big like copyright issue and stuff that like it's maybe a little bit outside of our jurisdiction here on this podcast.
So like all those issues come into play too when we think about how death and the internet work together. So death has been kind of weird when you look at the history of the internet as a whole. When the internet first started, it was pretty anonymous. Like you had IRC channels and message boards. But like you were just putting text on the internet. You weren't really uploading photos because that was difficult and took a lot more like space and time than most people had.
Right.
But that kind of anonymity meant that if you were on an internet forum and you just kind of died suddenly, there wasn't really a way for people to know about it. If people didn't know your real name, which wasn't all that uncommon back in like early IRC channel days, it would just be kind of like you just one day just never visited that message board again.
Right. You just logged off and that's about it.
Yeah. And, you know, it happened a lot. Things were disconnected back in the early days of the internet. A lot of the times, like your family might not know how to use the internet well. Like, you would be the only one who knew how to work the internet. which sounds wild to say now.
Right.
But that could result in like some weird things happening if you were a regular user of a site and then you died, you know. That's actually the start of one of my favorite internet mysteries. Do you know about Lake City Quiet Pills?
No. I don't think I've ever heard of that.
So it barely qualifies as like early internet since it is from like 2009, but things have changed really radically in the past 10 years. But basically there was a guy who posted on Reddit regularly and then he died and someone got into his account through whatever means and posted like, hey, this user died. We're having a memorial for him at this point. And then it kind of kicked open this whole rabbit hole that opened this whole world of like weird contract killings and like international murder for hire plots with like Hezbollah.
Wait, what did people think that the guy who died was murdered?
People thought that he was running like a hitman ring.
What?
Yeah.
Where did that come from?
It came from the fact that like you were kind of vaguely able to trace things associated with his username across like source codes of web pages. It's really wild. And there's a couple really good podcast episodes on it. Thinking Sideways is a really good one. But like, that's an instance where, because the early internet was really anonymous, if you died, there wasn't really a way to verify a lot of information, you know?
Hmm.
It had that potential to open a lot of rabbit holes because you could go off on really wild tangents after someone died. You can't, it's not like today where you can just go to like their Facebook page and be like, well, they didn't live in that part of the country, so.
Right.
No, they weren't running this criminal empire, you know?
Yeah. So just even having an absence of information is enough for anybody with like a conspiracy theory or just some kind of wild idea to run amok with it. And that's sounding like, I don't know, can't get too into the weeds with this particular case, but it does sound like there's at least some possibility that this got like blown out of proportion a little bit, right? Like sensationalized a bit, maybe.
I don't know. I think some of the stuff might be real, but it does seem weird that nothing has ever come out of this of consequence, really.
Hmm.
But I don't know. This like absence of information after this person died, like that was 2009. So 11 years later, you can't really do that. It's very difficult to leave an absence of information if you've been on the internet a lot.
Right.
And that brings us to one of the first things that I want to talk about, which is the idea of digital remains or digital immortality. So I tried to make this as like not nerdy as possible, but we're going to start talking about something called Web 2.0, which Web 2.0 is basically just the internet of user-generated content. So like social media, blogs, things where you're not just sitting down and reading, but you are actively engaging and posting things that you are generating.
Hmm.
Because Web 2.0 is user generation based, this means that pretty much everything you do online leaves a trail. Like the Neopets account I had in elementary school and the emo message boards I was on in like the mid-2000s, every bad AIM name,
mm-hmm.
all that stuff is collected and monetized by someone. Sometimes that does get purged from websites. Like I know MySpace accidentally deleted like a lot of old music at one point.
That was very sad, but the upside is that they deleted any evidence that I was on MySpace, let alone all of the embarrassing things that I wrote. So, you know, pros and cons.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some trade-offs there. There are some websites like Wayback Machine, which can archive things that get scrubbed. But a lot of that
shit.
Information, yeah, you got to watch out. A lot of that information is bought and sold and owned in some capacity by, like, whoever Justin Timberlake sold MySpace to. I think it was like Fox. Like, Fox owns MySpace now, which is very weird.
What are they doing with it?
I feel like every like 4 years I see a single post that's like, MySpace is back.
It's back, baby.
And then it's not.
It's the world's worst zombie ever.
Yeah. It's very easily killable. But this like trail that we all leave as we move around the internet has some really interesting impacts on, you know, how we're able to be remembered in the future. So in 2019, in the journal Big Data and Society, Big Daddy. What sounds better, Big Data or Big Data?
Big Daddy. Let's say Big Daddy.
In 2019, in the journal Big Daddy and Society, researchers...
Oh, you can say data or data, whatever you want. I don't give a shit. It's not daddy, sadly.
So, in 2019, in the journal Big Data and Society, researchers Carl Oman and David Watson published a study that claimed that within 50 years, there would be more dead people with Facebook accounts than living ones. So, the study, like, had some really goofy assumptions. Like, they assumed that user growth on Facebook stopped in 2018, which it definitely hasn't.
Nope.
But that's kind of the lowball scenario. Like, if you take the upper end of the range, they concluded that the dead will outnumber the living on Facebook by the early 22nd century. So about 100 years from now.
Okay.
So I'm going to have you read a quote by the authors of the study about what this kind of like backlog of dead people means.
This study presents an opportunity to respond with thoughtful and effective policy interventions when it comes to handling what we leave behind online when we die. The personal digital heritage left by the online dead are, or at least will become, part of our shared cultural digital heritage, which may prove invaluable, not only to future historians, but to future generations as part of their record and self-understanding. We wanted to bring in a more societal perspective and ask what the phenomenon of people dying on the internet means for us on a collective level.
Yeah. So what they're proposing here is that eventually Facebook, if it doesn't completely go belly up, will serve as basically like a digital archaeological dig for people in the future. Just like how we might stumble across like a abandoned village buried in England or something now, people in the future would theoretically be able to dig and comb through the archives and figure out like what people in 2020 cared about, what we thought about, what we read and watched and shared with each other. People 100 years from now could go back and be like, okay, so what did 25 to 45 year old white men living in the American Midwest think about the Black Lives Matter movement? It can get that specific. And, you know, as a fair reminder, that is possible because Facebook can choose to keep any information you put on there.
Right.
So that's how that stuff can kind of be kept.
Yeah. make sure when you post stuff on the internet that you don't mind Facebook as a company knowing it and keeping it forever. And yeah, it sounds like God knows who else in human history will also see it, which that reminds me when we're finished recording this episode, I just got to check Facebook real quick for like a couple photos from high school that I got to like get rid of. We can talk about it after the episode. We can talk offline. We don't need to get into this now.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's kind of crazy to think about what we do online when we're just goofing off now being like archaeology in the future.
Right.
And one of the ways that Facebook especially makes this easy is they are leading the charge on memorial accounts. So when you create a social media account on a website, that account will theoretically just go on until you close it.
Right. And I think I've seen what you're talking about on Facebook, where they'll change the top of someone's profile to say remembering Dorian Laffrey after they die. That now it's a memorial page where, you know, all of the photos that that person posted and photos they were tagged in and posts that they made are still accessible. Like, I've had, you know, some people in my life where their profiles have converted to memorial profiles.
Yeah, like Facebook is, I don't know if good is the right word, but Facebook is kind of leading the charge on that.
Yeah.
If you have a Twitter account and you die, Twitter will not let anyone else log into your account. Their only options are delete it or nothing.
Hmm.
Gmail and YouTube have really tight restrictions. Yahoo, if you have a Yahoo email, they actually refuse to let anyone else log into your account without a court order.
Wow.
I think Instagram is really restrictive as well.
Thank you, by the way, for reminding me that Yahoo exists, because forgot about that shit. But
well, I remember when they tried to pivot to like Oath at one point.
Yeah, what happened with that? And then they faded out of existence for like the fourth or fifth time.
I don't know, man. Oath sounded super tight, so I don't know what happened to it. But Facebook has this whole memorial system set up that if you want, you can opt into it right now. They have like a massive section in their help center that details your options. So, Dorian, what I'm going to have you do now is put Zuck's words in your mouth.
Ew.
And read us the options that Facebook gives anyone with an account after we die.
You want me to do a Zuckerberg impression? Is that what you're asking me to do subtly?
You could sound like literally anything. I don't think I've ever heard that man speak.
What I was going to go with for an impression of him is, because I only heard his like court hearing, would be like staring, you know, blankly and with big wide eyes and be like, "Senator, yes. Senator, no." He's a fucking maniac. There's an incredible video that I'll try to like send to you and, you know, put on our Discord or something about, like, it's him and his wife barbecuing, and somebody made a super cut of all the times that he said, "We're out here barbecuing." And it's just like so uncanny and strange and awkward. It's so good.
That's like a weird thing where like all these like weird internet dudes, like you give them like $1 billion and then let them live in like crazy public attention levels and they just kind of crack. Like the Twitter guy who like lives on a mountain now and like eats peyote 24/7. And
right. It's almost like having an exorbitant amount of wealth kind of like takes away from your humanity on some fundamental level. But that's a topic for another day.
You got to slap that apology suit on. Go before Congress.
Anyway, here I am, Mark Zuckerberg.
Dear Congress, I'm sorry that I licked Donald Trump's boots. I won't do it again.
Have you seen all those posts where it's like Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg, known child molester, argues that we should not have fact checking on Facebook.
I haven't, but that's very funny.
All right, I'll briefly pause dunking on Zuck to finally fucking read this thing.
Remember when he had a fucking movie made about him and everyone loved it, and then he like heel turned really fucking hard? I never saw it.
I don't. Yeah, man, The Social Network is great. You should absolutely watch that. Awesome soundtrack too. One of my favorite movie soundtracks of all time.
Reznor joint, right?
Yep, Reznor and Atticus Ross.
Atticus Ross.
Yeah, great stuff. Anyway, I'm gonna read this now. Question: what will happen to my Facebook account if I pass away? Answer: you can choose to either appoint a legacy contact to look after your memorialized account, or have your account permanently deleted from Facebook. If you don't choose to have your account permanently deleted, it will be memorialized if we become aware of your passing. Memorialized accounts are a place for friends and family to gather and share memories after a person has passed away. Memorialized accounts have the following key features. The word "remembering" will be shown next to the person's name on their profile. Content the person shared, like photos or posts, stays on Facebook and is visible on Facebook to the audience it was shared with. Memorialized profiles don't appear in public spaces, such as in suggestions for people you may know, ads, or birthday reminders. Memorialized accounts that don't have a legacy contact can't be changed.
Yeah, so some of the stuff you mentioned earlier, any immediate reactions to that or how it works when you see it actually on Facebook?
It's a little eerie, but I think that probably has more to do with just the nature of death being eerie, just that someone who used to be alive and interacting with you and other people in the world is just not posting anymore.
Yeah.
Immediate impressions about this from a technical aspect, I think it's cool to have the option of going back and looking at photos, especially, you know.
Yeah.
That's something that I think we're at a little bit of a crossroads where right now, you know, scrapbooking and keeping physical photos is just not a thing that most people of our generation do anymore. And I think about when my grandparents started to get older and then eventually passed, they had just boxes of photos, and I have a little stack of photos of like me as a kid with my grandparents and stuff like that. And it's really cool that they kept those keepsakes. And we don't really have an analog for that. It's cool that we're starting to get our own generation's option of maintaining that. But there is a bigger question. Add this to the list of questions that we can't answer on this particular episode, but you know, what are the implications of one corporation owning access to all of this content? It is no longer a physical thing that I can put in my house or my room or wherever I want. It is now digital information that belongs on a server in, you know, or in a cloud that is owned by Facebook. And
yeah,
that's concerning.
Yeah. I like that this option is very easily available.
Yeah.
It's very simple to go onto your Facebook, and it's like, you know, less than 10 clicks, you can have this set up. The weird thing about this, though, is that the only way you can delete your Facebook account after you die is if you specifically give someone the power to do that. If you don't have that option set up, your Facebook account will not be deleted ever.
Hmm.
Like, if you don't specifically tell someone to remove your Facebook, it's just there permanently. And that term is what people have started calling your digital remains.
Hmm.
The things you kind of leave behind, you know, like we were saying, as you go through. And sometimes it's cool. Like, you have photos you can go back and look at, you know, like my grandparents love Facebook. So I do have the ability to go and see a lot of photos of us together on Facebook. But, you know, they got on Facebook in their 60s and 70s, whereas people in our generation and Zoomers, like, we've spent most of our lives on the internet just kind of collecting and cataloging and creating ephemera and leaving things around for, like, corporations to vaguely own. Like, our data is bought and sold in the same way that who owns Death Row Records right now? It's like Mattel or Hasbro or something like that.
Wait, seriously?
Yeah. Yeah, Hasbro. Hasbro bought Death Row Records.
That is fucking wild. I did not know that.
Yeah, but I mean, in the same way that, like, Hasbro bought Death Row Records on, like, a concession, like, they were thrown into a deal when they purchased something from, like, Interscope Records or something like that when they were trying to make Trolls.
Huh.
That's how our data is transferred between these companies.
Right.
But as metadata and tagging gets better and better, it will be easier and easier for our descendants to kind of, like, dig through those piles and the receipts to figure out where it's went or where it's gone, which is nice. But it also means that, like, so if either of us have kids, do you think that they're going to find all the Instagram posts I made trolling Skyline Chili or, like, listen to this podcast?
It's a good question. I mean, it seems to me like the bigger issue at stake here is who owns this content. Because by default, it sounds like companies can just find it and profit off of it without our consent. And it sounds like the bigger issue is, you know, there might need to be something in place where people own this content and that this content is, like, passed on to someone else. So, yeah, I mean, in the case of our podcast, I would certainly hope that there's some, like, our kids or friends of some sort, like, we could pass this over to someone who, like, can do something constructive with it, that it's not just our podcast episodes get, like, absorbed into Spotify and, like, they're the only ones profiting off of our content that we created. Mm-hmm. You know, that would suck. That would be, that would feel a little shitty to know that that's, like, all our work amounted to, you know? So I would think the same with photos and videos and posts that you share on your social media. Like, who owns that? Who gets to, like, keep using that after I go? If it's just going to be, you know, billion-dollar companies, then I don't want that to happen.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that kind of directly plays into what leaving, like, a digital... I think your analogy of a scrapbook was great. And I think it lines up, like, we are creating right now a digital scrapbook that hopefully we'll be able to pass along to descendants, future generations. And I think in a weird way, the idea of a digital afterlife, like being able to have everything you've ever done on the internet, almost touches a little bit on our transhumanism episode.
Mm-hmm.
Like what it means to keep living after the physical death of your body. And there are definitely people out there who are like, well, maybe right before you die, you can scan your brain and upload it to the cloud and you can walk around in like a weird second life thing.
If you guys haven't already, go back and listen to our transhumanism episode. But I mean, one takeaway point from that was just all of this is a big what if.
Yeah.
The whole idea of uploading your brain to some kind of digital system is a gigantic what if that we are at best very, very far from achieving, and potentially it's impossible. It's potentially impossible for us to ever find a way to do that. So, no disrespect to all the transhumanists out there, but we do need to acknowledge that this is a little bit of a pipe dream as it stands right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we both pretty solidly came to that conclusion in that episode.
Yeah. We get into that more in that episode. Go back and listen to that if you haven't.
A thing that isn't a total pipe dream, though, is this quote I'm about to have you read from Irvin Yalom, who is a psychotherapy professor at Stanford University. So Yalom was born in 1931, and he's still alive now.
Yalom? I hardly know him.
Yalom?
I'm sorry.
So he was born in 1930. Yalom was born in 1931, and he's still alive. But this quote I'm going to have you read was written in 1989, so a good 30 years ago at this point.
Max, that's 31 years ago. And I know that because I am 31 years old. Same year the Game Boy came out. Anyway.
Well, I was born in 1990, and I'm 29. So one more year than that is 30. So I think we're kind of unraveling how time is a garbage construct now.
Yeah, this definitely reveals that time is garbage and doesn't make any sense anyway. Side note, sorry I was like an hour late to record the podcast the other day. But time is a construct, so you can't be mad at me. Someday soon, perhaps in 40 years, there will be no one alive who has ever known me. That's when I will be truly dead, when I exist in no one's memory. I thought a lot about how someone very old is the last living individual to have known some person or cluster of people. When that person dies, the whole cluster dies too, vanishes from the living memory. I wonder who that person will be for me. Whose death will make me truly dead?
So, this quote, for some reason, gets attributed a lot to Banksy, which is very weird.
Banksy is sexier than Yalom, I guess.
Yeah. This idea of being truly dead when we're no longer remembered becomes a lot more complex when we think about how we're going to, like, quote unquote, live on through our digital ephemera and digital trails. So do you think there's a difference between what Yalom is talking about, this idea of being in someone's living memory, and what a thing like Facebook collects, just having digital remains?
It's a good question. On a technical level, these are very different. On a technical level, you could make the argument that Yalom doesn't know shit about what the future would be like. But at the same time, you know, we have all kinds of information about things that, like, frankly, we don't care about. I'm sure somebody cares about, for example, who we're like, I don't know, you watch baseball, you care about baseball. There are players from 100 years ago that I'm sure you don't know who may have done impressive things for the time, but, like, even as big a fan as you are about baseball, there's people that you're just like, I don't know. I'm not going to like look up their fucking highlight clips. Maybe they don't even exist anymore.
Yeah.
And I think that simply having a record of someone existing and a record of the things they've done, as amazing as they might be, that doesn't guarantee that people are going to care for you and maintain your legacy after you die. I think on some fundamental level, when we talk about death positivity, the idea of like taking away the taboo of talking about death, like one of the things we do need to acknowledge is that like when you die, there will be like you can't control what happens after you die. Like you can't make sure that your legacy is going to endure forever no matter who you are. That some stuff, no matter how detailed a record there is going to be lost to history one way or another. And, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's like humanity has like accounted for like what percentage of measurable time in the universe. It's like we're a blip on the radar in terms of how old we've determined the universe to be. It's like, it's conceivable that all of the stuff that we put on the internet will cease to exist. So I don't know. It's hard for me to put too much stock into, like, yes, if I, like, get my affairs in order, then my Facebook profile will live on to eternity. You know, we do have to face the fact that, like, those things are not a done deal guaranteed for all of time from here on out. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's spot on and makes a lot of sense. Like, even, I mean, you brought up baseball, so I'm allowed to talk about this.
I broke the seal. Go ahead.
Even think back to, like, a lot of early, any one of the multitude of black baseball leagues that existed before integration happened in Major League Baseball. For a long time, people didn't care about those leagues, and their games weren't recorded. They weren't televised. If there were physical records kept, the black newspapers who usually kept those records had their archives destroyed later on by newspaper conglomerates to bottom out. And there are a lot of people who did, like you said, incredible things that we can't find anything out about, even, you know, 100 years from when it happened.
That is a good point. There is something privileged about being a little insecure about your history being preserved when there are many people, many cultures that exist to this day that have had their history completely wiped out.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's, they didn't really have the choice. And meanwhile, like, any anxiety you have about your Facebook profile and, like, where your family members came from is a little bit of a privilege that a lot of people don't have.
Yeah, I mean, that actually segues really well into what I want to talk about next, which is kind of the extent of our privilege with technology we have here in the West. And really, in most parts of the world at this point, how closely we're linking our lives and deaths with technology. So I'm going to have you read kind of a long piece here. It's a transcribed excerpt from a speech by Natalie Kane, and we're going to link to this. But it describes one possible future that the Internet of Things, which is like, you know, your fridge is connected to your coffee maker via Bluetooth, and they let your phone know when you need to buy more carrots or whatever. This piece describes one possible future that this integration with technology could lead to.
You are sitting in a room in your house. You are older than you are now. Maybe a lot more, maybe not so much more. You are nearing the end of your life, and you know that you are. You have been told well in advance by a series of health scans and monitors that started their long, slow ritual months before today. The fridge that you reluctantly bought on the advice of your doctor, that was once so good at stopping your midnight feasts, stops calorie counting and gives you what you would like, not what you need. Somewhere, your children are arguing about who will manage your data estate, not knowing how much you have scheduled for permanent deletion, and who will have access to what. At the moment of death, the camera positioned to check up on you from well-meaning relatives flicks from red to amber, indicating that it has stopped broadcasting to anyone but your doctor. You were always aware your death would be hidden from your family and friends to save them the misery, and that it would be wiped if it was anything sudden, or in this case, quiet and slow. The house goes to sleep. The heating, knowing that you are no longer active anymore, starts to cool. As it receives the slowing data from your heart rate monitor, strapped fastidiously to your wrist, it turns the air conditioning on full blast. The house, given express wishes by you, only calls the ambulance once you are dead. Slowly, your data is disappearing, day by day, as the devices that collect and store it notice the inactivity, or just predict when it should stop. Only a few stores remain, your finances and your health scans that you promised to keep for your insurers.
I mean, it's bleak, but as we willingly join more and more devices to our lives, I don't think it's that far off. like machine learning means that machines are figuring out how we operate, and they're kind of able to predict our own behavior better than we can. And some scenarios like this, even if they're well-intentioned at first, might end up being a lot more common than we'd expect. And like, I genuinely hope that the evolution of technology doesn't push death more out of the picture and cause more people to die alone like this. And I hope people aren't just reduced to like data scans and Facebook pages. But like, what do you think about this? Do you think that as we integrate tech into our lives more and more, do you think that's going to be good or bad for death positivity?
Some of this is dependent on personal preference. I think about a few of my really outdoorsy friends, and the idea of them dying surrounded by a bunch of machines is really unthinkable to them. I have one friend in particular who I feel like, given our conversations about his camping trips, which are like nearly once a month, and you know, he camps all year round, he loves the outdoors, and I just imagine like he's probably got some plan in place for when he's old and ready to pass that he's going to go out into the wilderness, you know. So obviously this particular scenario is really antithetical to, is really like disturbing and gross to some people just based on their preference of what they would like to have happen. Others might love it. So I can only speak for myself personally and say that I would rather not have this. I would rather be, you know, not alone, you know, have someone with me when I'm about to pass. Yeah, I don't know. It's there is something about like the slow reveal of, oh, I'm going to die, when like the machines start kind of shutting down and the AC goes on and just all this shit. It's like, I don't know, watching everything around you die before you do is pretty unsettling.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Who am I to say that like someone wouldn't want this scenario, you know? I am sure that some people would view this as like, yeah, this is just machines being efficient and we're conserving these resources for someone who's going to be alive. And that's great. But you know, for me, I want to be around other human beings when I die, if possible.
Yeah. I think that's spot on. You know, I think we are, the two of us are very against this, but it is efficient, and if machines can tell, and if they, you know, have the ability to not like blip a little thing on your phone that's like, your estimated day of death is within like 2 to 4 weeks, that's probably fine.
This does highlight some issues that are current, like the line about your children arguing about who will manage your data estate when you've already determined how much is going to be deleted. I mean, this is analogous to what happens today very frequently. Just, you know, a lack of communication about someone's wishes for what happens to their estate after they die. Mm-hmm. That just being like a hotbed for family conflict. And it could have been as simple as just communicating a few things to your family and making a couple simple decisions before you die. You know, that's stuff that like people do fight about that shit now. And that is something that can be, I mean, you and I have like made mention of wanting to do our wills and how that like might be kind of a fun piece of content for our podcast. But there's the flip side of like, it'd be nice to have that in place, even if it's unlikely for us to die at this young an age. Just to do something that's like a future service to our family members of preventing conflict and strife over materials, or in this case, data, would be like, it's a service to people we care about to like get that shit settled ahead of time.
Yeah.
So some of this is like just technological preferences, but some other stuff, like some of the more disturbing stuff that I see here is like, that's a current issue that like we do deal with people dying.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. You know, it looks different than what we go through now, but really it's the same basic mechanisms.
And yeah.
So I don't really want to be all doom and gloom about this or like a Luddite. I think in some ways the internet is making death conversations more upfront than they were in the past. And to close us out, I want to take a journey back to the halcyon days of 2016, which was the year people thought was like the worst year ever. So I have a list here.
You're right.
This was the year that David Bowie, Prince, Carrie Fisher, Muhammad Ali, Harper Lee, Leonard Cohen, Sharon Jones, Jose Fernandez, Gloria Naylor, Bernie Worrell, Maurice White, like tons of famous people died. And people were like, oh, 2016 is like the worst year of all time. And I know you really want to talk about Prince, so like just let me know when. But this year was really interesting, or 2016 was really interesting, because I remember Facebook being like inundated with tributes and RIP messages, and with like Bowie and Prince especially, I remember there being like people were like weird death gatekeepers about it. Like, you remember when the joke used to be like, oh, you're wearing a Ramones t-shirt, name three of their albums.
Yeah.
Like, I remember seeing criticism of like performative grief and questions about sincerity when Bowie had died, especially.
Well, some of that, I think, you know, a lot of that is just like music is especially egregious. Fans of music get like super protective and gatekeepery of like the things that people like. But some of that is a little bit justified. I think in particular about how brands have dealt with some of this shit. And, you know, with Prince in particular, did you ever see Cheerios tribute to Prince?
No.
So I'm going to screen share and show you.
God.
But,
is this better or worse than the SpaghettiOs Pearl Harbor thing?
Ooh, probably not quite that bad, but, Cheerios just tweeted hashtag Prince, and the attached image said rest in peace on a purple background.
Oh,
and they literally
God.
Dotted the I with a Cheerio.
Oh, that's like, that's maybe about as bad as the SpaghettiOs thing, because it's so low effort.
Well, yeah, point being, I will say this in defense of that shitty gatekeepery attitude. The opposite is like, not only is everybody jumping in with their opinion on who died and kind of capitalizing on the trending moment, but it's also like you have really egregious shit like brands taking that moment and making it about themselves so that they can sell more products. And just like that is like almost poetic in how insulting it is. To have something that ultimately you are dotting the I with a Cheerio, because like, what is this about? It's about putting Cheerios on people's brains. It's not about any kind of honor. It's not about Prince. The only thing that it remotely relates to Prince on is a purple background. It's like the most low effort fucking tribute ever. And brands have done this like all over the place with all kinds of celebrity deaths and like crazy events in the news. I mean, we're seeing the current trend is the black background note from a brand about how, you know, we see you, we stand with you. Just basically a lot of vague things about the Black Lives Matter movement and protesting police brutality, but none of it like making any kind of concrete statement. Just like saying a lot of emotional shit to get people riled up and like think about your brand. So yeah, I think that there's egregious things on both sides of like celebrity deaths and really high profile things like this.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry to rant about Cheerios for a second. Also, nobody likes your bland ass cereal. Get the fuck out of here.
I love Frosted Cheerios and Apple Cinnamon.
Okay, Frosted Cheerios. Frosted Cheerios, they rock. Apple Cinnamon Cheerios, I forgot about. Damn. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But yeah, I mean, this like, I don't know. I think when people target Zoomers in this, it emerges from like stan culture and having to need to prove you're more dedicated than anyone else to someone.
Right.
But that's just like dumping on kids. I think like people have done this for forever and they just call it gatekeeping.
Yeah.
I'm going to have you read an excerpt from the MIT Technology Review This is from an article titled, "The Internet Has Changed How We Deal with Death."
In the aftermath of David Bowie's death last week, your social media feed probably filled with tributes. It's tempting to look at the outpouring and think a few words casually dashed off, a YouTube video shared, or cry-faced emojis represent something less than real grief. But public digital expressions of grief like those are more than just sincere, they are a very important part of the healing process. Hashtag RIP David Bowie was a hashtag, yes. It was also a funeral. Of course, David Bowie's death doesn't affect most of us the way the loss of, say, our mother would. But even in the event of more personal tragedies, the ubiquity of our lives spent online often means that is where we also choose to honor the dead. People were similarly accused of shedding crocodile tears over the death of Princess Diana, and such grief policing isn't likely to go away, but neither is public online grieving. In fact, it has already become part of the ritual of death.
Yeah, so when you talk about, like, the hashtag RIP David Bowie being a funeral, I certainly wouldn't want Cheerios showing up to advertise at my funeral.
For sure. No brands. Keep the brands out of it.
Yeah, we'll get them out of there. But I do think that one good thing the internet has done with death is it's enabled us to share about death a little more openly. You know, like if a celebrity died and they meant a lot to you, it's less scary to put a note or share a favorite performance on the internet than it can be to like talk to someone about that in real life sometimes. And I like genuinely wonder if, as this goes, if we're going to see it start to spill more and more into the real world. Like, as this death ritualization is brought more and more into the forefront of our minds, like when a celebrity dies, it's like all over Facebook or whatever for X amount of time. Like, it's difficult to pretend that death doesn't happen when it's shown a lot more in both good and bad ways. Now, I think we're going to have to reckon with death a lot more, especially celebrity death, than you would have if you lived in like the 1970s and it would just be relegated to like the obituaries or like life section of a newspaper. I don't know. I think grief has become a more normal thing on the internet. And I don't want to judge sincerity, but I think being able to bring these like conversations and celebrations into the greater cultural conversation is nice. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I agree with that. It is interesting. Like, I wonder if previous generations noted death when it was just something especially tragic, when, you know, a famous musician dies at 23 years old or, you know, something like that. Or what is it, like 26 is the number? Of
27.
Jimi Hendrix. And 27, that's right. Yeah, just like it was only discussed when it was something really out of the blue and crazy and tragic. Maybe it is good that we are talking a little more openly. We are like celebrating someone's life when they die just as frequently as like big achievements in their career or something like that. That they get to trend on Twitter for a little while, and then we share like positive memories and favorite songs and performances and stuff like that. I was kind of thinking too about the wedding hashtag. Did you guys have a wedding hashtag of like, hey, when you post your photos on Instagram, use this hashtag? I can't remember.
We did have a wedding hashtag.
Okay. You're making a face, and I understand, like, it's a really corny thing, but I mean, what's the purpose of that? It's basically to like create something where you can collect all of the photos that are taken at a special moment that you helped like put together. You know, you put together a ceremony that you could invite friends and family to because it was this really meaningful moment for you and your wife. And so like as cheesy as I want to say the wedding hashtag is, it's also like I think that's an interesting parallel where like hashtag RIP David Bowie is really corny and gauche just on first blush, but it is doing something cool. It is something cool in, you know, in conception. Even if a lot of the people who take advantage of that to promote a product or do something egregious with it, even if those people are like bad actors and like doing shitty things, that doesn't take away from the goodness of, I remember when David Bowie died and how many people were sharing favorite songs and favorite concert performances and crazy stories of his life that were really amazing and funny and interesting. It was beautiful. And I would, this sounds corny as fuck too, but I wonder if like funeral hashtags will be a thing. Like, again, sounds fucking awful on first impression. It sounds really cheesy and forced and terrible. But if it's one more thing that helps us collect memories of people who were important in our lives on a personal level, we get to share stories and experiences with them in a more, like, accessible way, I don't think that that's a bad thing.
No, that's
okay,
true,
I'm not going to... I'm not going to die on the hill of the funeral hashtag, but I'm just saying maybe it's not a bad idea if people try to do that. Okay.
Well, I think especially like as people get spread out more and more through like across the United States too, you know, it can be prohibitive to travel for 3 or 4 days for a funeral. A lot of people don't have the resources for that.
Right.
And being able to do that in a technological space is cool. That's a great point you just brought up. I like that a lot. I also will not die on that hill, but I like it
right.
if someone did it. You know, I wouldn't be opposed to it. I'm much less opposed to it now than I was before you said that. So
yeah, even our podcast, you know, we're in a Discord with like people from Iceland and Seattle area and like different countries and just like all over the place. We, like our Discord, even being kind of small, is still like a very wide reaching geographical, you know, collection of people.
Yeah.
I feel like that is just one of many avenues of like Discord servers and message boards and like groups that we're on online that do connect us to people all over the world, that it like being creative with the ways that we celebrate someone's life when they die might be a good thing. 'Cause I would certainly want to know if like someone in our Discord had passed or like, you know, I can't necessarily fly to Iceland for a funeral, but I would want to like take part in some way to, I feel like I'm like calling out one person. I don't mean that. Please take care of yourself. But you know, just by way of example, if someone in a different part of the world that we couldn't like be there in person for their funeral, I would still want some way to like be part of the celebration of their life. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's an excellent point.
This was a really cool episode, Max. I'm glad you put this together. I think that like we have a little bit of a rhythm with our episodes where sometimes we do just fun, silly shit, because there is fun, silly shit that has to do with death.
Hell yeah.
You know, talking about food rituals last time was pretty fun. But I do appreciate these kind of like bigger question topics too. I think about the episode on the Long Now and transhumanism and all that stuff. Like it is really interesting to take a step back and, you know, get a little philosophical thinking about the bigger questions. So thanks for putting this together, man.
Yeah, no worries.
Cool. And thank you guys for listening. Tell us what you think. We're cracking open a lot of topics here, a lot of big questions about the internet and how we use it. And do you think that any of this sounds cool or interesting or really offensive and egregious? We love hearing from everybody who's listening to this podcast. We don't want to be just like the only two people forming opinions on this stuff. So why don't you talk to us? We're at PreDeadBoys on Twitter and Instagram. You can email us predeadboys@gmail.com. Search for our Facebook group. Just search PreDeadBoys Podcast. Should pop right up. And you can join our Discord server, where that's probably like the single most active conversation place on the internet that we both take part in. And our Discord is really cool and filled with a lot of friendly people. So if you want an invite to that, just message us on, you know, one of the above platforms that I just mentioned, email and Twitter or whatnot. We'll get you an invite there. If you would like to support this podcast, there's a few ways you can do that. The best way is to join our Patreon. Go to patreon.com/predeadboys. You can pledge a monthly amount of money and get bonus goodies, depending on how much money you give us. We got a bonus episode coming out, I believe, shortly after this episode comes out, that will be all about a video game called A Mortician's Tale. It's kind of a mortician simulator game with an interesting story and just like a lot of interesting details that Max and I discuss about, you know, what's it like to work in a funeral home and what's that industry like? And just, it's really cool. It's a really like beautiful little game that we had some really interesting discussion about that. And we recorded it for you to listen to. If you just support us at $5 or more per month, you can get access to that. If you support us at any amount of money, you can get free wallpaper. It's not free because you're paying for it, but you can get wallpapers for your desktop or mobile devices. Just lots of good stuff on there. Go to patreon.com/predeadboys. It helps us out a ton. Max, we got a new patron. We got $5 per month from Ford Theater Reunion. I don't know if that's a name of a person or if they're promoting an event, but Ford Theater Reunion gave us $5 a month.
Is that not clicking for you? That's where Lincoln was assassinated.
No, that went right over my head. Damn, I do appreciate, like, I've had a couple friends who have like told me they're gonna sign up for our Patreon and just put something real offensive or something and make me read it on there. I'm telling you guys, if you give us money, I will read what you put as your name on air. I will do it. I'm not above it. I am shameless. Thanks to the Ford Theater Reunion for $5 a month. We also got Tom Falera updating his pledge from $5 per month to $15 per month, which is fucking crazy. Tom, you're a madman.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you so much. And I just want to say real quick too, some people have had to like downgrade their pledge or cancel their pledge. And a couple people who have done that have like messaged us privately or commented on like, hey, I'm so sorry. Look, the world's a crazy fucking place right now, and there's a pandemic still going on, and here in America alone, we're at like the highest unemployment rate that we've seen in a really long time. And it's crazy. If you need to, you know, reel back on your financial giving, you will never hear us complain about that. Max and I are always cool with you like taking care of yourselves. Like, we want people who listen to our podcast to be happy and healthy and like doing the best they can with what they've got. And if you're able to support us financially, that's awesome, but please don't feel bad if you need to back out or if it's just not doable right now. We're still going to put out free episodes every 2 weeks or so when I'm not having computer issues editing podcast episodes. We're still going to just put out the normal episodes for free for anybody who wants to listen to them. So don't worry about that. Don't worry about, you know, giving us a shit ton of money. Just a special thanks to the people who did pledge money and continue to do that. We really appreciate all of y'all.
Absolutely.
If you don't have money, one way you can support us is by leaving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. For example, Cosmic Doe left us a review on Apple Podcasts. The title is Entertaining and Thought-Provoking. Cosmic Doe says, I listen to you guys a lot and love your podcast. Thanks for being death positive and covering such interesting topics. So that was a very kind message. Thank you, Cosmic Doe.
That's very kind. Thank you.
Really appreciate it. And we appreciate that little boost in the rankings on Apple Podcasts as a result.
On the internet.
That's right. Anyway, thanks a lot. And just the best way that you can support the podcast in general is just like tell a friend about an episode. Tell somebody to listen to this. Share it on social media. We don't advertise. We don't have Cheerios giving us money so we can talk a bunch of shit about how insensitive and tactless Cheerios were.
No one is safe from us. You can't hide behind money from us.
Not Cheerios, not Stamps.com, not any of these corporate overlords trying to come in and fuck up the podcast game. We talk shit to whoever we want, and we like to keep it that way. So we don't want to advertise. Just keep sharing the show with your friends. I'm going on a little bit of a rabbit trail. Let's wrap this shit up. Our intro and outro music is the song About Time by Brat Curse. Check them out at bratcurse.bandcamp.com or look them up on Spotify or wherever you stream music. And that is going to do it for us.
Oh.
So you're done with, like, are you cutting yourself off of Facebook or, like, are you done with Twitter? What's your current, like, social media sabbatical rule? Are you coming back to it?
I don't really have any clear plan. I don't know. I haven't logged on to Facebook in a while. I still have Messenger, which shows a lot of stuff.
Okay. You know, this is an opportunity. Maybe it is time to abandon Facebook. Maybe it's time to just stay off Twitter. You and I can lead the revolution in bringing back Neopets. What do you say, Max? Trying to start a new Neopets account with me?
Literally, like, 4 days ago, I said, hey, remember Neopets to Katrina? And then she went and created a Neopets account.
No way.
And was like, actually, this still sucks. I don't think they've changed anything since, like, 2006. So,
all right.
So maybe that shouldn't be our first choice.
Back to the drawing board with our revolution. We'll figure it out someday.
Habbo
anyway.
Hotel.
We can do that. Oh, fuck. I do remember that. As long as it's not Zanga. Anyway, Max and Dorian here reminding you, you're going to rot.
What's your favorite TikTok?
TikTok hasn't... Ew. Oh, Jesus, dude. I don't know if TikTok has been around long enough for me to pick a favorite. I feel like I've seen some that are funny. I've even retweeted some that are like, turn off the internet because this is the best TikTok of all time. So that's a long way of saying I don't know. What's your favorite TikTok?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know anything about the... damn website. I don't know.
Okay. This is like the most concise moment of both of us sounding our age in a very extreme way. And now it's on recording. And there's a good chance that I'll sneak it in after the episode and people will listen to this and we will be exposed. How do you feel about that?
Oh, I'm fine. I'm like, it's just long vines, right?
Kind of. But there's also lip syncing and like...
which you could do on Vine.
I don't know. There's like Starbucks and long nails and that's the motherfucking tea. That's a TikTok, right? Please tell me I'm cool and relevant.
That's the Kermit meme, though. That's just the Kermit meme, which was an image macro from like 2013. So I don't know what the...
Oh, all right. KnowYourMeme.com. Is that what this episode is about? Is you it's telling me about memes and their history?
Encyclopedia over here.
Welcome to the Pre-Meme Boys. It's a podcast about the history and culture of memes.
What's your favorite meme, dude?
My meme is Dorian. With me, Matt, as always, is Max.
My favorite meme is Squidward.
Mine's Neon Cat. That's my favorite meme.
You think anyone remembers that anymore?
Apparently I did.
You think anyone cool remembers that?
Hey.
Wait, was I not muted?